Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to Best Practices in Researching Latinos. This presentation is the result of a collaborative effort by members of the QRCA Latino Special Interest Group, which is dedicated to serving QRCA members who work in the Latino and Spanish-speaking markets. The Latino SIG is open to QRCA members interested in learning about and enhancing the quality of qualitative research conducted with Spanish-speaking populations globally. It provides a supportive venue for inquiries and problem-solving related to Hispanic qualitative research, with the goal of focusing on the realities of Hispanic qualitative research, providing information and a forum for the interchange of ideas. And it also serves as a resource for insights related to the Hispanic market. One of the objectives, or the key objective, of the Latino SIG is to develop a best practices guideline that serves as a model for conducting research with Hispanics in the U.S. This is the topic of today's session, which will be presented by Ricardo Lopez, president of Hispanic Research, Inc., and the Latin SIG chair. Ricardo has been studying the U.S. Hispanic and Puerto Rico markets for over 20 years. He holds an MBA in marketing research from Syracuse University and a BA and BS degree from King's College in Pennsylvania. His company specializes exclusively in Hispanic marketing research and is located in New Jersey. Ricardo has a very diverse Latino background himself. He was born in Venezuela of Cuban parents and grew up in Puerto Rico. He has family in Costa Rica, in Spain, and throughout the U.S. He also has very close ties with Guatemala, having recently adopted two children from that beautiful country. Ricardo is the leader of the marketing research is a leader in the marketing research community. He is a past president of our organization, the QRCA, and is an active member of the Marketing Research Association, where he has been certified at the expert level. Before beginning the presentation by Ricardo, just a couple of reminders. I handed out some evaluation forms. Those of you that do not have one, I'll give you one. So if you could please fill it out at the end of the session and hand it back to me, because I have to take it over to the registration desk. And the other thing is, if or at the time that you have anything that you would like to ask Ricardo or any comments that you may have, we ask you to please use the microphone because your contribution, so that your contribution can be recorded. Even though you think that you might be heard from wherever you're seated, it will not necessarily be clearly apparent here. So we ask you to please use the mic. Okay, and now I leave you with Ricardo Lopez, chair of the QRCA Latino SIG, and today's presenter of Best Practices in the U.S. Hispanic Market.
Hey, Maracas, yeah! Woo! All right. You feel free to use the maracas any way you want, you know. If I'm doing something wrong or right, have a question. Actually, I'm sorry? Either end, yeah, that's fine. That's your personal preference. All right, let me tell you a little bit what we did. The purpose of this presentation is not my presentation. Me, myself, is a presentation from the Latino SIG. And those of you who are here, who are members of our group, if I say something that you want to add to, please feel free. Or if you want to sit up front here and grab the mic, that's fine too, okay? What we did is we set out, when we formed our special interest group last year, we said, well, one of the things that we think is really important is to give a little bit of education of what Hispanic research is all about, especially because there's a lot of people out there, a lot of QRCs that are being asked to do qualitative research in the Latino community, and there are things that are very basic to some of us that have been doing it for a lot of time, but we get asked those questions all the time. So why don't we put together sort of like a best practices document? We worked on that, and we came up with a short document. It's only about 6 pages, two-sided. And what we called it is practices and suggestions. We took out the word best out of here because there's not really a best way of doing it, and we don't want to say that these are the best. These are just some suggestions of things that work for us. So it's more of an informal document. It's not a code of ethics or anything like that. It's just some suggestions. The paper is here, and at the end of the presentation, you can take it, and this is what we wrote, but I'm not going to read from this. I'm just going to tell you a little bit what is included here by showing you some slides and things like that. I'm going to have to come over here to advance this, which is a pain. First of all, we set out, and if you read the presentation, it talked about U.S., Hispanic, and Latin America. We were going to include both here, but two things happened. Number one is we did not get approved for a two-hour workshop, but only for 1 hour, so that cut our presentation in half. Number two is we found out after talking about it that these are very different subject matters, and Diva and I were talking about that before. Doing research in Latin America, some of the suggestions that we have here do not apply over there, so it doesn't translate. It's not adaptable that way necessarily for the countries in Latin America. So please keep in mind that, in essence, these are two different worlds, and we're going to concentrate on U.S. Hispanic for the time being. The Latino SEC may go forward now and talk about doing research in Latin America, because we do have a lot of members in Latin America, but that's not what we're going to concentrate on, all right? Okay. What are we talking about? We're talking about a lot of people here, 44.3, I think that was the latest figure that I saw. But there's a lot of what we call Latinos in the U.S., and this is why it's getting all the attention, and this is why all the clients are talking about it, and they're asking questions, and they're saying, okay, we want a representation. In reality, you cannot do general market research in the U.S. without including the Latino community, because the Latino community is 14-15% of the population anyway. So if you are going to be representative in the general market, you have to include this one way or the other. And the problem is that you cannot easily include the Latino community without going out of your way. Through our normal process, they are not included. Because of the databases that we use, the methods that we use, the way we go about it, it just doesn't work that way. And the language, which is a big issue. What is the Latino community in the U.S. anyway? Because we saw that picture before with all these people, and everybody talks, oh, 44 million, it's like a big... But the point of the matter is it's like very diverse group of people and very different people, and they come from very, very different backgrounds. The one thing about the Latino market is that they are new immigrants to the U.S., most of them got here recently. And there's a big difference, immigration now as immigration how it used to be years ago. People came and they came with the idea, we're coming to the new country, we're going to melt into the pot. This melting pot mentality doesn't exist anymore. Things are different now because of the world is smaller. Everybody keeps communicating with their country of origin. And I'm not talking just about the Latino immigration. Any immigration nowadays is different than it used to be. But keep in mind that there are many, many different people from different areas. And they look different. They are different. One of the things that we have in this document, which people ask me all the time, because, okay, how about race? And we say Latino is not a race. Hispanic is not a race. And Hispanic is included as a race category. A lot of times we see it in screeners. We see it in how you define people. And one of the suggestions that we right away throw out is, like, don't include Hispanic as a race. It creates a lot of problems right there, because it is not. Hello. As a matter of fact, the term Hispanic itself was invented so that we can make a category. I like to say that there are no Hispanics outside of the U.S. There's Venezuelans and Colombians and, there's different people from different backgrounds. But we come into this country and we're told, you are Hispanic. We say, okay, cool. So that's who we are, because we want to belong to something. We want to feel like we belong here. So we are Hispanic here, and a lot of times we are asked the question, what is your race? A lot of Latinos do not know I don't know what, you know, it's like, okay, I don't know. I myself say I'm Caucasian. Every time I see that, if I see Hispanic, I put Caucasian. Well, that's my race. I don't know why there is Hispanic. But there are a lot of people of mixed backgrounds that they're not sure themselves. I got an email a couple of weeks ago through my website. Some kid, I really took my time to answer him back because he sent this heartfelt email saying, I don't really know.
We've invented.
Hello.
So I'm in the enviable position of having young researchers at some of my core clients. I think I have a building.
What was that? No, that's all right. I guess I don't know where. Maybe they're listening to this next door. All right. We have a bigger audience than we think. Let me move on from this because I'm going to come back to it. Who is Hispanic anyway? And the question comes back to, we're talking about doing Hispanic research, Latino research. What does that mean? Who is Hispanic? In reality, there are many, many different groups that we group together here. 20 different countries, people of different backgrounds, different races, different... And we come together and we group them together and we say, we're going to do research on this. I had a clip here that I wanted to play. This is Paul Rodriguez, and I had a little clip that doesn't work for some reason. It was working this morning, but it's not working now. But he has this stand-up comedy act that he did on HBO where he talks about the Latino community, and it's really funny because he has this whole thing, Hispanic is not a race, and there's a whole comedy thing about that. But anyway, we're going to skip that. Let's talk about why we're lumping all of these people together. One of the things that the Latino community does have in common is that there are some things that come from the heritage from coming from countries that were colonies of Spain that bring people together. Most Latino subgroups are family-oriented. We put the family first. We relate to the family. As a matter of fact, when I ask participants in focus group what their goals are, what is your goal, what is your objective, what comes back is for my children to go to college, for my children. They don't have personal, everything has to be through their children, and they come to this country for their children to get a better education, a better life. But family is very, very important, and that goes across the groups. There's some religion and spirituality issues that also, besides religion, the Catholic, you know, religion did bring a lot of customs and a lot of things together that were throughout the colonies. But going beyond that is just the sense of being religious or spiritual, connecting at a different level. We find ourselves that when we are with other Latinos within a room, we tend to relate differently when we talk in Spanish. I've done focus groups in which they are bilingual people and the group is not going well and I switch to Spanish and it changes the whole conversation just because of how we're relating differently at that moment. The Spanish language, of course, and the experience, the immigration experience, the fact that all of these people from different places came into this country and they're sharing something in common. They're sharing being in a foreign country. They're sharing the same. If they are confronted with prejudice or discrimination, they're sharing that as well. So there are some things that the whole Latino community has in common. By the way, one thing that people ask all the time, and I get it out of the way, is it Latino instead of Hispanic? Okay. Latino is becoming the preferred term. Unfortunately, I named my company Hispanic Research Inc. That was many years ago. Hispanic is more a term that we use for, in industry and research. It's an accepted term. Most people don't get insulted one way or the other. But, you know, I tell my clients, if you're going to come out with a product or a service, use Latino, a Latino food product, Latino, because that is more of an accepted term at the community level. So, anyway. Couple of things about doing research in this market. Important things. Number one is selecting the markets. When you are going, say you have a client and you're saying, okay, you want to go out there and do research in the Hispanic community. It is very important to think of where you're going because you can go to LA, you can go to Houston, You can go to the, you know, to the valley down here. You can go to Miami, New York, Chicago. Depending on where you go, these places can be very, very different. Because not only do you have the geography difference that LA is very different from New York, and that is in the general market too, and Texas is very different from everything else, and that's in the general market too, but it compounds because you have acculturation, the number of years that people have been in this country. You have country of origin, so you go to Miami, very different makeup in country of origin from New York, from Chicago, from the Southwest. And you have language skills, you have education differences. It makes a very big difference when there are new immigrants that came here, very high education levels, but they came here because the situation in Argentina it was very bad, or the situation in Venezuela was very bad, but they have PhDs, as opposed to some Latinos that come with very, very low education for the same reason, to do better, but they have they complete a third, fourth grade, and that's it. Very different type of makeup. And by the way, going back to selecting the cities, I have clients that come to me and they say, okay, we're going to do research in the U.S., but we cannot go to more than one market. So let's do it in Miami because I want to go to Miami. You might as well go somewhere in Colombia or somewhere, because Miami is like a foreign country compared to the rest of the U.S. It's just a very, very different market. And it's an important market. It's an extremely important market in the U.S., and for clients that want to market their products in Miami, they got to go in Miami and do research because the opinions are completely different sometimes. But you cannot do Miami and say, okay, Hispanic USA feels this way. Not really. The reverse is also true. If you do research in the Southwest, well, the bulk is here. And this is what people think. Do Cubans feel that way? I don't think so. You know, there's very big differences there. The same thing with the Dominicans and the Puerto Ricans, and you have like the different numbers. The fact of the matter is the bulk is the Mexican community. There's no doubt about that. But a lot of the influences and what clients hear come from some of the other groups. I mentioned the Cubans. The Cubans are very influential in politics. I have a Cuban background, so I can say that, but they are like the Jews in the Latino community. You know, they are very influential in that sense, the same way. And I live in a Jewish community, so I know how it's just a different mentality. So you have to pay attention to that because everybody does, but you have to understand the complexities. It's a very, very difficult market. You cannot just say, I understand the Hispanic community. I'm going to do research here, here, and there. You got to be very careful of how you select the cities. If you're not careful also on how you make your selection, it's not only selecting the markets. Say you're doing the screener and you're going to recruit people for your focus groups. If you're not paying attention to education and other things like that, you can end up with very, very different people as participants in the focus group. And it doesn't work. It doesn't really work if you have somebody that is very educated but in the arts, somebody that, you know, it's a more like a Guatemalan Maya, you know, very low education, you know, came to this country just to make money. You can end up in a group that has different people, and if that happens, it doesn't work. So it's very, very important to take a look at the makeup of the group and how you put it together. The language. By the way, these are my children.
Make sure.
My Guatemalan children. They are actually 26 days apart, different birth mothers, but they are like, in the adoption world, they call them virtual twins. So, language. You know, even though, you know, the language. Okay, that wasn't that funny. Language. One of the things that you have to pay attention in, again, we're talking about putting together groups, and I'm talking about focus groups because it has certain things in the makeup of the groups that you got to pay attention to. But one is, say you have focus groups, and you say, okay, I want bilingual people in my focus groups. Okay, fine. Well, you got to be careful because if you have, you can have people that prefer, they're bilingual, and they say they're bilingual. By the way, politically correct, as Latinos in this country, we all say we're bilingual. Okay, it's the right thing to say. So what happens is, when I ask that question in a screener, you got to be very careful because...
You can do it in the dark. But to me, that's an important thing.
Most people are going to say that that they are bilingual, okay? Now, what happens is you can end up in a group that has some people that prefer to speak English, and they go with English, and some people that prefer to speak Spanish, and they go in Spanish. And how do you handle that in a group setting?
Right? The phone's right there.
Okay. Worse than that is in the situations in which you have, say you are doing Spanish dominant, okay, and you recruit for Spanish dominant, but you're saying, okay, you make sure you speak Spanish, but there are some people in the group that are bilingual too. But that's okay because they are bilingual. They should be able, we're going to hold the discussion in Spanish. But sometimes they go between Spanish and English and they switch back and forth. And if one person in that group doesn't speak English at all, it doesn't work. So in the screener process, it's so important to check language and to make sure if it's bilingual, what's the preference, and everybody has to have that preference. If it's Spanish dominant, everybody has to be really Spanish dominant because otherwise if somebody switches to English, so there's a lot that goes on there.
Suggestion on what we do in the screener?
But come to the mic.
Well, usually what happens, and obviously it depends on the purpose of the project. If it's doing a Spanish language advertising, if the client wants to do an ad or a campaign in Spanish, then you most probably want people who speak Spanish. So usually to get around, and you know, I know some of you know this, some of you may not, we just use a 5-point scale on language preference. What comfortable are you most comfortable speaking at home? So if it's Spanish only, they qualify. Spanish more than English, they qualify. Equal? I don't know. Depends. But if you want Spanish dominant, you take top two. Number four would be English, more in Spanish, and then English only would be number five. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. So that's a 5-point scale that we use. So if you want bilingual, I would say you would knock out Spanish only, the number one one, right? Or the English only. So that's how we handle that on the screener.
And there are, you know,
there's other ways to do it.
Yeah, we have different ways, and that's why we didn't go in a lot of the things in the suggestions. We didn't go into detail because we each have a different way of doing it. But the important thing is to pay attention to it. Designing the. Yes.
To the sound system.
Okay. One of the things that we find out, and this came up when we were, by the way, all of these suggestions came out of a bulletin board discussion that we held, and we went back and forth, a lot of us. Okay. And one thing that we noticed is that when clients are starting to do Hispanic research and they go and they want to, okay, we got the budget, but the budget is not what they have for the regular market research. So they have limited budgets, and all of a sudden, they have never done Hispanic research, so everybody in the company wants to add something to the guide. So we, more so than anybody else, we end up with this humongous guide. I'm sorry?
4-hour
focus groups. We end up with... they want us to perform miracles. And in reality, one of the things that we're going to talk about in a few minutes is that, you know, it's even more difficult to go through the process because... You know, it takes longer to do things in the Latino community. It's not coming through now, but it did a bunch of times before.
Can you tell if it's from the presenter or from the open mic?
Mine is James Voice.
Who's James Voice? Yeah. So
it's James.
It
sounds
like James.
I'm sorry. There might be a cross frequency on this. So let me just.
All right, you do that. I'm going to keep talking. Is that okay?
Yeah.
All right. So that's something to watch out for. The other suggestion, though, that we have has to do with with anything that has to do with writing exercises. And this is not only exercises during a focus group or during an interview, it's exercises at the waiting area. We have them write things, or we send homework assignment, or with anything that has to do with writing, we got to be very careful with, for a number of reasons. Number one, education. You know, some, their illiteracy, actually, people that are not even able to read or write, is pretty high in the U.S. Latino community. But even besides that, people that speak perfectly in Spanish a lot of times have difficulty because of low education levels. Maybe they can read, but they cannot write well in Spanish. They are very uncomfortable with that. And we have the second generation Hispanics in this country that grew up here. They speak Spanish as a first language. They spoke Spanish at home. They are very comfortable. They communicate at that emotional level in Spanish. I get more out of them in Spanish. But they never took Spanish in school. They don't know how to write in Spanish because we don't teach Spanish in school in most of the schools in this country. So, you know, it's if you never took English and you went to school, yeah, you speak English because you learn it at home, but you don't know how to really write in English. And that is an issue we have with writing exercises. We've got to be very careful. Another part of that is that we are not very structured people, and everything that is like when it comes to something very structured to us is like academics or a government form, and we are very uncomfortable with that. So,
Ricardo, does this also apply like to collages?
I'll repeat. So you said it applies to collages and
the same kind of homework.
Yeah, and I want to just leave it at this here. I have another slide that I want to touch on that. Okay. One of the issues with the way we do research, too, is that, and I said we're not very structured people, research sometimes feels very structured and very institutional, and especially focus groups, because we're asking people to come to a very corporate-looking setup. Sometimes these facilities are in a corporate building. They have hallways. They have conference rooms. They look very structured, very corporate. If you're talking to blue-collar workers that are not used to that corporate structure, that do not work in that environment, for them, is very foreign, number one. Number two, it feels institutional. It feels like a school. It feels like a government. It just doesn't feel like a place where I'm going to share who I am because I'm very concerned about what I'm going to say, let alone if you're doing research with illegal immigrants. You're having them come to a very, what feels like a very unsafe place. So a lot of times, an idea is to do research, use different methodologies, depending on the methodology that we select. And there are many, many different methodologies, of course, but we find ourselves doing a lot of on-the-street interviews. We find ourselves doing a lot of ethnography, in-home work, going to their places and talking to them directly. And when we're doing it within the focus groups, and we have some ideas for that, we try to go out of our way to change the environment. One of the things is the living room style setup, which works, you know, very well with anything that we can do. Food, for example, a lot of us talked about we let people bring the food into the room. Some facilities are like, oh, don't bring the food into the room. I'm like, bring everything. It's like, you're my guest. And if you were at my house, I'm going to offer you food. You bring everything. You eat. You do whatever. You know, you want to get up. Make them feel comfortable. Make them feel at home. Non-traditional settings work well, as I said. And I spoke a little bit about what this slide was about before. But let me move on to some other issues. Recruitment. The same way that we connect as QRCs with the participants in a focus group or an interview, the way recruiters recruit Latinos in order to do it correctly is very different. Okay? They have to find a way to really communicate the way we communicate. And the way we communicate is we talk to them not in a structured questionnaire, okay, I'm going to give you the screener questions, this and that, but it's more a conversation style. I'm going to talk to them. I'm going to find out, what do you think of this? This is who we are. Explain a lot about what the research process is, because they don't understand the research process. Make them feel comfortable so that when they say, I'm going to come to the interview, they actually mean that they're going to come to the interview, because in the Latino community, a lot of times, we want to be nice and we want to please. And being nice and pleasing says, oh, yeah, I will be there. Yeah, I will. I have no intention, but I, yeah. Okay, I'll be there. And that, obviously, that's not what we're trying to do. And when you use the fact that a recruiter has one person in the office that speaks Spanish doesn't mean that they can recruit Latino groups. Not at all. And I've had so many situations, oh, yeah, yeah, we can do it, we can do it. But we confirmed everybody and nobody's here. How did you do it? You know, were you paying attention to, you know, did they really believe you? Very, very different world. Designing the screener, we talked a little bit about designing the screener before, but there are many, many different issues that go into the design of the screener in terms of the recruitment. First of all, defining who is Hispanic. And there are many ways of doing about it. I use self-identification. Do you consider yourself Hispanic or Latino? If you do, that's fine. But then I go on. I'm going to check on the language. I'm going to check on country of origin. I'm going to check on number of acculturation. I'm going to check on everything that is important to me to make sure that I have the right person in the group. I don't ask race. It opens a can of worms. It's not a good question to ask. Income is another iffy thing to ask. I'll tell you why. There are many people here that are new immigrants that they make very little money, but their education is up here. And there are many people that are making a lot of money and their education is down here, but they work in construction work and they make a lot of money. So it's just income varies so much. That's one issue. Another issue is that a lot of times we ask for a household income, and that's crazy. They don't know what household income is. As a matter of fact, what is a household in the Latino community? Sometimes it includes the cousins and the aunt and whoever. There's a million people living there. They don't know what they make. I got to tally this up. But, you know, let me check. It's not how it works. We don't know household income. It's not a household of mom and dad and the kids and everybody knows and this is a household income and we know. No. Household income doesn't work that way. So income as a way of defining groups, it's not a very good thing to have in the screener, but clients will fight all the time for it because they always want it. Education is a better one in terms of classifying people by educational levels. Literacy, we spoke about that before, but in terms of the screener, it's very important to give them an out somewhere on the screener that if you are going to do any kind of exercise that they need to read, concept boards that you're not going to read out loud, anything that you're going to give them that they have to read or they have to write, there got to be a way to screen people that cannot do it out without embarrassing them. And it's easy to do on the screener because at the end or at some point you can say, oh, we're going to have some writing exercises, blah, blah, blah. You're going to have to read. And is that okay? Or do you need glasses or whatever? Is it okay? You know, you ask a different question, but give them an out so that they say, you know what, I can't do that. Or, oh, my eyesight is not good, sorry. Or it's really that they cannot read. But we don't want to embarrass them. And if they do end up in the group, which they do, as a moderator, we got to find a way to deal with that. And my way to deal with that is, you know, and I think, Jim, you brought that up before, too, is like go around and say, oh, you're having trouble, you know, with this. Let's see what this means. And just make it like you're helping the whole group and be very sensitive to what's going on. Don't force it. How come you didn't write anything? I never do that. As a matter of fact, I hardly ever force them to write anything. Even if there's a writing exercise, write, but you don't have to. If you have really uncomfortable, just think about it and keep that thought. I'm going to talk about it in a minute. That's what I said to them, not that I'm going to talk about it. Latino time. I have to put that up there because it's an issue, especially if the recruiters are not sensitive to that, we tend to be very laid back, especially with new immigrants, about time. This is even a bigger issue if you do research in Latin America. But that's a different story. That's a much bigger issue. But here we're kind of learning about time. But still, my groups very often start late. And what you have to do is, some of the things that Jim and some of us are doing is this whole thing about the raffle. That, we say if you're there half an hour, 50 minutes before the group, everybody that is there at that time, which is the time, you're going to give an extra incentive, a raffle, an extra incentive among those people. And if it's a database recruit that people know about the research and the process, it works very well. If it's not a database recruit, my experience is that it doesn't work anyway, the raffle. At that point, it's better to tell them the group is at 3 o'clock when it's really at 4. Okay, and recruit way ahead of time to give them time to get there. And then if they get there, do something else in the meantime. Very, very important in anybody that is doing research in this market, please remember that the concepts are a lot of times in English if you're doing Spanish dominant. Clients don't think of this. It's like, and they don't tell me to translate. I'm thinking that the ad agency is translating the concepts, and now I put it on every proposal and everything. I'm not doing the translation because I'm not pricing the translation. It's not easy to do a proper translation. And it cannot be done on the spot. People think that, the moderator will translate right there before the group. No, I can't do that. The interpreter cannot do it either. We are not, even though I still have an electronic dictionary that I carry with me just in case and all sorts, in case I have to do it, because it happens all the time. But it's very important to make sure that everything is translated ahead of time, that it's going to be presented in language. In terms of recruitment, again, a lot of recruiters, Latino recruiters, make arrangements for transportation. This is not important in every U.S. market, but it's important in many U.S. markets. In New York, it's not that important because everybody knows how to use the public transportation system. We hold the groups in the city, which, by the way, is different. Some people say, let's go to New Jersey, to the suburbs. No. They don't have a car. There's no transportation to Secaucus or Fort Lee or whatever the facility is. All the transportation goes into Manhattan. We're holding the groups in Manhattan. I hold groups with people from New Jersey in Manhattan. I did some groups for, it was on some New Jersey government agency, and we did them in Manhattan. Because people could get there, and they couldn't get to a facility in New Jersey. But some facilities that do Latino recruitment, especially in L.A. and some big areas that the public transportation system doesn't work as well, they arrange for transportation. They send a van out to pick them up. That way you make sure that they get to the facility. And then the client always worries. It's like, there was nobody here and they all came together. Yeah, because they came in the van. That's my daughter, too, by the way. Marina. Childcare. One of the issues that we deal with is people show up for interviews with their family, and they have no, we have mothers that, even though this should be taken care of in the screener process a lot of times, if there's no arrangements, some facilities do have arrangements for childcare, for babysitters, so that they can take care of that. A lot of times when it's a sensitive issue, the husband comes with a wife and stands there. And once I've done in-home interviews, I did in-home interviews for a women's magazine for the Siempre Mujer that we work on with the same client. And when we did these interviews, I got to these places, and I'll tell you, every time the husband was there, and I come in, I said hi, I start talking to him, he goes, you're all right. And then he just takes off, does something else. But sometimes they take off from work even, because they don't, especially if it's not a database recruit. A database recruit, they're more used to the process. But childcare or family members being there, it's something that facilities have to deal with. The Latino host, facilities, please insist that somebody's there to greet these people and they can speak Spanish. Some facilities use outside recruiters, Latino recruiters. They get the people there, and then Nobody's there to greet them. Nobody's there to rescreen them because the person that is there doesn't speak Spanish. And it doesn't work very well. And even if it's bilingual groups, it's good to have a bilingual host there that can go back and forth. Because sometimes, especially if you're talking to Puerto Ricans in New York, they can switch 5 times in one sentence between English and Spanish. Another suggestion that was given is to have, signs and at the facility, because they come into this corporate environment sometimes, and they're not used to these hallways and elevators and where to go, and it's very confusing. People actually walk out, and they got there, and they go home because they're so uncomfortable, and they cannot find a place, and they are intimidated by the whole process and the institutional look of it. So if you have somebody out there greeting them, hi, here's a sign, go over there, blah, 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 I'll take you, and facilities... Good Latino facilities will do that. They will have people that go to the downstairs. I know some of our SIG members, some moderators actually go themselves with signs and make signs and put them out there, and go out of their way. Another way that I do this and some other people do this as well is going out to greet them yourself and to talk to them outside. That gives you the opportunity, too, to check on language if there's somebody that you don't think would be a good candidate. Because if you look at all the specs on a sheet, you don't get, especially the language issue. I want to make sure that I have people that really, if it's a Spanish dominant, that are really Spanish dominant in the group. So another suggestion. Spanish. Spanish is a language. It's not a. There are no dialects. People say, "Oh, there are so many different dialects." There's no dialects. Dialects means different versions of the language. It is all the same language. We have the same rules. It is the same Spanish. Theoretically, we can all speak the same language and understand each other because it is the same language. I like to say for people that are confused about it, it's the same as if you have people from. From the UK and Australia and Jamaica, and you have different accents, very, very different accents, and some words are very different, but it is the same language. There is no reason why a good qualitative research consultant that speaks the language cannot moderate any of the subgroups. It's more important that you know how to connect and do the other things than to know the variety. But you do have to know certain things about the subgroups. I mean, you cannot be totally ignorant. It took me a while to really, because I do so much work with Mexicans, it took me a while to really understand every word that is said, from how you say hangover to how you say, it's just a different word than what I was using. But the language is all the same. And there's nothing wrong in research, even if you don't understand a little piece, to say, I'm sorry, I'm from, Puerto Rico. What do you said that word. What does that mean? And nobody has a problem with that. The whole issue of the interpreter is a humongous issue. Very, very big. Very, very big. Because as a qualitative research consultant, my work depends on the interpreter. If I'm talking in Spanish, I'm doing the group in Spanish, if the person in the back room is not able to keep up, is not able to interpret what's going on, the client is going to be like, you didn't touch on this. Sometimes I go like, oh, could you cover this, ask these questions? I spent 15 minutes on that. What are you talking about? And it is very, very important to get a professional interpreter. Never, never, never allow a client to say, I have somebody in the office that speaks Spanish that is going to go there and is going to be able to. They can't. It is a trade. It is something that people are trained to do, and not everybody can do it. That doesn't mean that somebody that is not truly trained cannot do it. There are people that are gifted that way. My sister is an architect, and she's one of the best interpreters I've ever used. She refuses to do it for me, but I've called her on occasions. It just comes easily to her. But it doesn't come easily to everybody. And it doesn't mean that if somebody's certified and on paper to be an interpreter, it doesn't mean that they can do it either. It's sort of the same as being a moderator. That's... Okay, I'm not going to go into certification. But it's sort of the same thing, because you can be totally certified and whatever, and that doesn't mean that you're a good moderator. You could you could have all the training in the world, but you don't know how to connect to people. Interpreters, court interpreters, for example, they have a very different job. They could be certified, but they are interpreting not continuously. They are not simultaneous interpreters in the sense that somebody says something and they stop. Wait a second. She said this. Okay. What? Okay. He says that. But in our work, we need somebody that is going with the flow. And the good ones do it. They amaze me because the good ones can change the tone of their voice. They translate a lot of the communication in the Latino interviews are nonverbal communications. We use our hands. We go like, and they communicate that. They're like, you know, whatever. And the way they say it and the way I had a lady that I use, which I like how she works. I was in a group, but she tends to be quiet otherwise. But when she gets into the interpreter, she goes on. And I was doing this beer groups with Latino males, and she was interpreting. And then in the middle of this, she's like, F this and F that and blah, blah, blah. And the client is like, and she turns around, she's like, it's not me. I just, I don't say these words. But she's doing a good job. One of the things that we deal with, and this is especially from some, the Mexican community, Central America, Guatemala, Honduras, they tend to be brought up with this whole idea of respect. Respect is very important in the Latino community. And you have to be respectful. You have to look down. You have to... Authority is at a different level, and you better be respectful of authority. What happens with this is that we have to break this up in the groups, because the minute they come into this corporate facility or whatever, and they see a moderator, they are into this mode. You're an authority. I'm being respectful. I'm just going to answer the questions accordingly. I'm not going to be myself. I'm not going to share too much. And it doesn't work that way. So we work very hard at breaking this down so that they are who they really are. Because when they come out, they're very talkative and they are like amazing. And, you know, that goes away. The way to do it is we've got to be at the same level. And I think in our group, we all agreed on that. We have to come down to their level. Immediately when I go to a facility that has the bigger chair for the moderator, I take that thing out of the room, get a chair that is the same size as everybody. Unless we're videotaping, I many times don't even sit at the head of the table. I sit on the side, I stand, I go back and forth, I sit with them. The living room style, whatever can be done to break up this whole idea that you are at a different level than they are. And by the way, this whole respect affects to the typologies of the different participants. You know, we have like the different people that act different ways. I find this more in Central America, Mexico and Central America, but I don't find this in the Caribbean. So when we have mixed groups, some of the Caribbean participants, the Cubans, they are just loud and they're not doing that, and the other ones are, and it doesn't work unless you deal with it. The reason I put this here is because one of the things that we have to take into account is that a lot of people that are new immigrants are not, they're not familiar with research. So we spend time, a lot of times, especially in the recruitment and in doing the research and during the interview, explaining what this is all about. Look, this is what research is. It's really your opinion, and your opinion is going to be important so that they understand, because we think as researchers that people understand this, because in this country most people do. It's part of the culture. Survey research has been around for a long time. But in Latin America, it hasn't been around for a long time. They are not used to it. Every time they see any kind of questionnaire, it's either an exam at school or a government form. Both of them, you need only the right answer. You know, there's questions, but there's only one right answer, and you have to be very careful what you answer. And they're very uptight. We have to let them know that this is a different process. Their opinion, whatever comes into their mind, that whole thing, that's what is important to us. I spoke about the nonverbal communication there. Not only is it important in the, you know, in the recruitment process and all of that, but nonverbal within the group as a moderating skill is very important, or an interviewing skill, because what happens is a lot of times I'm reading the nonverbal and I'm understanding it, but the client is not understanding the nonverbal. So what I do is sometimes I get it, and even though I get it and everybody else get it, I just verbalize it. And I just say, okay, what you're trying to say is this and this and this. Is that correct? And everybody goes, yeah, of course. Yeah, all right. I did it for the client. I did it for the tape. Because we needed to verbalize that to make sure that we get a recording on the nonverbal. We can also do that, you know, in the analysis as well. One thing that we have to deal with in any kind of Hispanic research is the fact that we don't talk in straight structure, linear way. We just go in circles. So guides are never followed in this fashion. So a lot of times we're talking to people and, you know, they go on a tangent. The fact of the matter is I'm asking questions and the answer is in the story that they are giving me. And I tell the clients, you cannot stop the storytelling, because in the story is the answer. And we speak with storytelling and we speak in circles and we talked about different things. And you cannot let that, you cannot cut that flow. You have to let that happen. But you have to control it. What I tell clients is, like, don't worry about it. I promise you that at the end, we're going to go around and we're going to cover everything and we're going to have it. And I'm going to go back there and I'm going to check with you. But it's very important that the client is on board with the way we communicate, because if not, they get very frustrated at that back room. That's a question about techniques before, and some of them are collages and projective techniques and things like that. Some of them work very well, some of them don't, okay? Anything that is too structured, linear, you know, doesn't work very well, because it's just, you're asking for too much. Projective techniques that work, I know you use a lot of projectives in your work, there are some very simple projectives that work very well, especially for people that have low education. They cannot verbalize things, so they are able to verbalize, okay, if this were an animal, or if this were, you know, very simple projective techniques. But if you just take it far into the more advanced projective techniques that have visualization and things like that, what we find, a lot of us, is that Latinos have difficulty playing the game. They just go like, whoa, what are you talking about? And Marta and I work with the whole thing with closing your eyes and one front. It was close your eyes and people are looking at you like, what? What are you? No, this is crazy. This is just, we don't do that, okay? We don't. Some of it works, some of it doesn't at all. In terms of collages, I find that they could work, but they require a lot of time. They require a lot of time in any group. There's no doubt about it. But with the Latino community, it could take even longer, because people are going into stories and discussing, and it could just, I avoid them because of that reason, because I don't have time for it. Even though the times that I really had time for it, it was fantastic, and I got a lot of information out of it. And I spoke before about the devil's advocate and what that means. Actually, I don't think I mentioned that. I use that. That's one thing that I do a lot of times, because one of the things that we have in Latino research is that people tend to agree all the time on things, and they have, you know, that's good. Here, I'm going to show you a commercial. Tell me. And sometimes I do this because clients want ratings. Oh, yeah, get a rating on a scale of 1 to 10. And I do this for fun. On a scale of 1 to 10, where 1 means this commercial, you don't like it at all, and 10 means that this is the best commercial you've ever seen in your entire life. You never, ever have seen anything better than this.
You're 9.
What number do you have? 9, 9, 10, 10, 9, 9, 10, 10, 10.
If I don't like it, it'll be a
second. And it was like, okay, so, but what happens in those situations is when we show concepts and things like that, the nonverbals are very important. You're looking around, you're going around the table. I had situations in where they're saying, oh, yeah, it's good, we like it. And then I go like, all right, so clearly you didn't like this commercial. Why didn't you like it? I go, oh, yeah, I didn't like this. And I didn't. without, because everybody communicated nonverbal and they knew that I understood what they were saying.
Right.
But that's not what they verbalize.
Right.
So if I find that something is going, that everybody's agreeing with something, and I feel that it may be something else, sometimes I play devil's advocate and I take a position myself and I say, I don't know how you guys like this, that. I hated it. I didn't like this at all. And then somebody may say, like, you know what, I hated it too, to tell you the truth. And then you go from there. Or sometimes there's dead silence, and I was wrong. That confirmed that they really liked the act. But at least I tested it. So that's, you know, one technique that I use. We have something in Spanish called chispa, which is Latino wit, which is we make fun of ourselves. We're not very serious in that regard. That's why we like partying and we like dancing and we like to be casual and we like to make fun. And in connecting to people, we like to take that approach too. If you're too serious in doing your interviews, if everything is too structured, it feels very foreign to us. So I like to poke fun. I like to throw things. I use a lot of personal stuff, despite what people say not to do. I give examples of my own life all the time. Oh, my wife did this and whatever. And usually they are meant to be funny. Funny things, like usually making fun out of myself. Oh, my wife criticizes me for that all the time because blah, blah, blah. And I just add, but it adds to the discussion and they share more and it makes the connection much better because that's how we do it. That's how we do it in real Latino communication. Finally, the analysis, and what the analysis is, and I put a stupid picture there from an old printout, but I think what I was trying to communicate here is the fact that a lot of the Latino research we have to do a lot of work at the end in trying to take a look at the nonverbal, take a look at everything everybody says, make sense out of it. I include a lot of times secondary research, other things that I have learned. I try to tell a story because what I find is that our role is not only as gathering the information, we are educators because we find that we're working with clients that are clueless about what the Latino community is all about. So in the analysis, I'm doing education as well. And a lot of times I, you know, go ahead and do the presentation and do a lot of work that is more on the education side. And a lot of us, when we did the discussion, agreed on that as well. And finally, if anybody has a couple minutes for questions. And if anybody else, I don't have to answer the questions. Anybody else I want to answer the questions, that's fine.
No, Jack Kravitz from São Paulo, Brazil. Ricardo, I just have a question. Brazil is similar to a certain extent to the rest of Latin America in that we have so many different populations,
right,
different ways, commonalities, but also great differences. How do you work this out between, you know, hondureños and salvadoreños and colombianos and peruanos, if they're all put in one pot as Latinos in the States? We're coming from, you know, there are all those commonalities you showed us,
right,
but there are all the differences.
Correct.
How do you work that out?
It's a very difficult thing to work out. And what happens is, and that's why I said at the very beginning, I presented both ends. Number one, it's not one thing. It's many, many different things. But there are some commonalities. What I found is that in this country, from a marketing perspective, people got grouped together and got added together. But the market themselves, they found themselves, we're in the questions period, okay?
Okay.
Everybody, what was that?
Latino time.
Yeah, Latino time, that's right. Just to answer your question, what happened was that a lot of times what I find that happens is that people here start feeling that they are part of the groups, and I think we're learning from each other. The Cubans are learning from the Mexicans and the Mexicans from the Puerto Ricans and everything else, so you find Mexicans dancing salsa, which is not typical Mexican music, and you find Puerto Ricans eating Mexican food, and Cubans liking mofongo, and, you know, all these different things that are coming together because people are feeling like they're all part of the same. Well, thank you.
Thank you.
Oh, yeah, the maracas. Here you go.